Welcome back to the Rav Hirsch on Parsha series on OU Torah. As we begin the final Sefer of the Torah, Sefer Devarim, and we will be studying Parshas Devarim with Rav Hirsch's commentary this week. And Rav Hirsch opens up the Sefer by analyzing the opening pasuk, Ela ha-Devarim asher diber Moshe el kol Yisrael, be'ever ha-Yarden. These are the words that Moshe spoke to all the Jewish people on the opposite side of the Yarden, Bamidbar, Bo'arava, Mol Suf, Bein Paran uVein Tofel, V'Lavan v'Chatzeros v'Dizahav. And this just seems to be a list of places: Midbar, Arava, Mol Suf. These are just lists of places. Some of these places which we've never encountered before, earlier in Chumash. So Rav Hirsch suggests that these names are indicators or markers of the location where Moshe gave this final speech to the Jewish people, the final speech which is the entire Sefer Devarim. And he gave this speech before his death. Now, Moshe Rabbeinu left no grave, no place, no memorial, no place for us to see his kever, and we have no concrete memorial for Moshe Rabbeinu. And there's he gave this speech, his last speech, out in the wilderness, in the Midbar, which is just this vast emptiness, and there are no identifying features of the geography that can be used to mark the location to see exactly where they were at this moment in time when Moshe Rabbeinu gave his speech, where Moshe Rabbeinu died. This Rav Hirsch says elsewhere. Rav Hirsch describes how we don't want to turn Moshe Rabbeinu into this sort of hero worship. Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest Navi who ever was, and to avoid the possibility of Moshe Rabbeinu being worshipped in his own right, Kadosh Baruch Hu ensured that his burial place would not be known to future generations. However, the Torah here describes as precisely as it can, says Rav Hirsch, the place where he gave this final speech, so that if someday later on the Jewish people wish to find this place, and by visiting this place, he will hear an echo of the words of Moshe Rabbeinu found in Sefer Devarim, the Musar that he gives, the mitzvot that he relayed. He will be inspired to follow them and keep these mitzvot and listen to the words of Moshe Rabbeinu. So then the Torah provides some sort of marker as best it can to enable us to find this place. And it marks it by describing it as Eber HaYarden, in the Midbar, in this Arava, which are in these plains, Mol Suf, opposite place called Suf, Bein Paran, Bein Tofel, V'Lavan V'Chatzeros, V'Dizahav. These seem to be the sort of nearby places, and in between all of them is where you'll find this location where Moshe Rabbeinu gave the speech to Klal Yisrael. The Torah is trying its best to describe a place that cannot be described because it does not have any unique features to it. But by giving a whole list of places and hoping that somewhere in the middle is where we will find this the location where this speech occurred. Now, Rav Hirsch also cites the more famous comment of the Sifrei, which is cited by Rashi at the beginning of the sixth parasha, that each of these locations are a hint to some sort of avera that Klal Yisrael did throughout their time in the wilderness. For example, Mol Suf refers to the complaints at Yam Suf, and Ben Paran and Ben Tofel, Vlavan is the Mun, which was white, Chatzeros, Dizahav is the Egel Hazahav, and Rashi gives a list of each of these places are really not necessarily places, but they're references to averos. Moshe Rabbeinu began his speech by giving tochacha to the Jewish people, rebuking them for the averos they did throughout their stay in the Midbar. But rather than mention it outright, Moshe Rabbeinu wished to minimize the shame of the Jewish people, so he did not record these sins outright, for all posterity to remember, but rather he just they were hinted to in the written record of his speech, and were not mentioned explicitly. Rav Hirsch tries to harmonize his explanation together with the explanation of the Sifrei, and he says that perhaps these are references to the Averos, but they are also references to actual locations. And he says it could be that when Moshe and the people arrive at this final stop in the Midbar, the stop from which they would be departing into Eretz Yisrael, so they named the places around their encampment with names that remind them of their Averos. As in this way, as they were preparing to enter Eretz Yisrael, they would be reminded of their mistakes in the past and remember to correct the underlying character traits that led to those Averos and fix them now before entering Eretz Yisrael. They went in, they got ready to go into Eretz Yisrael with the mindset preparing them to not repeat the mistakes of the past. So Rav Hirsch says the Sifrei is correct that these are hints to Averos, but they were also place names because the places, the locations, the borders of their encampment were named after their Averos. An interesting idea that they would want to remember their Averos. This is part of what the Bali Musar tell us. V'chatosi negdi samid is a pasuk in Tehillim, which said that my Avera is constantly in front of me. It's important for a person to remember his Averos even after he has done teshuva for them, even after they're in the past, because there's always concern that he may slip up again and there's always room to improve and to learn from the mistakes of the past. And this is what Klal Yisrael were doing here, says Rav Hirsch. They were naming the locations around their encampment after their Averos as a reminder for them at this very critical moment, this moment of transition into Eretz Yisrael. They wanted to be surrounded by reminders of the mistakes of the past so that they could correct them going forward. At the beginning of the Sefer, Rav Hirsch also gives a very important overview of Sefer Devarim as a unit, as a whole, and explains to us what the function of this Sefer is and its sections. Because we know the Sefer is called Mishnah Torah, which means the repetition of the Torah, because it's Moshe Rabbeinu repeated all the mitzvot. So we read about this in Pasuk Hey, where the Torah tells us, Be'er ha'yarden be'eretz Moav, on the opposite of the Yarden in the land of Moav, Ho'il Moshe be'er es ha'Torah hazos lemor. Moshe Rabbeinu began to explain this Torah with the following words. So part of the primary purpose of this last speech of Moshe Rabbeinu is to explain the Torah, to repeat the mitzvos, and review everything with Klal Yisrael before his death. However, when we look at Sefer Devarim, we see that there are more than 100 mitzvos in Sefer Devarim, but more than 70 of these mitzvos are brand new, were not mentioned in previous Sfarim. And there are a few mitzvos that were previously mentioned and are repeated in Sefer Devarim, but those are in the minority. So it's strange to call the Sefer Mishnah Torah when the bulk of the Sefer is indeed new mitzvos and not repetitions of old mitzvos. And if you look in the Perush of Rav Hirsch, he lists a complete list of all the mitzvos in Sefer Devarim grouped into two sections. One group is new mitzvos in Sefer Devarim, and one group is the repeated mitzvos in Sefer Devarim. But Rav Hirsch gives the entire list out here in the straight through in the Perush, a long list. And he wants to understand why some mitzvos are new, only to be mentioned in Sefer Devarim, and why certain mitzvos, only a few of them, are repeated in Mishnah Torah, and why those were singled out from all the other mitzvos. So Rav Hirsch, to explain this, chooses one group of mitzvos and compares the repetition in Sefer Devarim to the earlier initial teaching of these mitzvos. And he does this with the mitzvos of Shalosh Regalim. So Reverse points out that we first encounter Shalosh Regalim, the Yomim Tovim, in Parshas Emor, in Sefer Vayikra. And there, this is a Parshas Moados, which we read on, which we land on Pesach and Sukkos, Shor Chesed O'Ez. And in that Parsha, we read about all the important days, Shabbos, Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkos, Shemini Atzeres. All the important days of the year laid out with all their details. Now here, in Sefer Dvarim, some of this is repeated in Parshas Re'eh, later on in the Sefer. But only Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos are repeated. Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shmini Atzeres are glossed over. They're not mentioned in Sefer Dvarim. Why? So Rav Hirsch explains that the common denominator of the four important days that are not repeated in Sefer Dvarim is because the purpose of those days is more of the connection of the individual to Hashem and not the tzibur. The Rosh Hashanah and Kippur are personal kapara. Shabbos is a personal recognition of Hashem's hashgacha over the world and his role as the creator. Shmini Atzeres as well is a direct connection to Hashem. It's not necessarily as part of a tzibur. And in fact, they're also, the 4 days are not related to the agricultural cycle. Pesach is related to, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos correspond to certain points in the agricultural year where Pesach is when the grain begins to ripen, Shavuos is the harvest, and Sukkos is when everything is gathered in, and that is the aspect of the regalim which is underscored in Sefer Dvarim. It's not really mentioned in Sefer Vayikra. In Sefer Dvarim, we refer to Pesach as Shomor as Chodesh HaAviv, and Shavuos is Mehochel Chermesh Bakoma, and Sukkos is Ba'as Pecham Yigarnecha Umiyikvecha. Whereas Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Shmini Atzeres, and Shabbos have no relationship to the agricultural cycle. In fact, there's also the aspect of Aliyah L'Regel. Aliyah L'Regel, which applies in Eretz Yisrael, going to the Beis Hamikdash Yerushalayim, is for Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, not for the other Yomim Tovim and Shabbos. Also, Rav Hirsch says that so Rav Hirsch explains that these aspects, which are stressed in Sefer Dvarim, are related to or become more relevant after the Jews live in Eretz Yisrael. Aliyah L'Regel is for Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Aliyah L'Regel is only required of someone who owns land. So it only is relevant once they enter the land. The agricultural cycle is something that only pertains to the people once they own land and are actually farming it. Again, only after they enter Eretz Yisrael. And Rav Hirsch adds also that Sukkos is meant to be a reminder, Kibas Sukkos Hoshavti Es Bnei Yisrael Potzio Samei Eretz Mitzrayim, that Sukkos is a reminder of the dwelling places of our forefathers in the Midbar, hardly relevant to the people when they're still in the Midbar, but primarily relevant when they enter Eretz Yisrael. And the Araminim are species which are commonly found in Eretz Yisrael, not necessarily in the Midbar or anywhere else. So what Rav Hirsch seems to take away from this comparison is the idea that Sefer Devarim seems to emphasize mitzvos that relate to the Jewish people as they enter Eretz Yisrael. So that's why Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos are repeated. Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shmini Atzeres, which don't really change very much. The observance is pretty much the same. The meaning is pretty much the same, whether you're in Chutz La'aretz or in Eretz Yisrael. So that was not written down in Sefer Devarim. And with this idea, Rav Hirsch then goes through some other important groups of mitzvos that we find in Sefer Devarim. For example, we find many mitzvos pertaining to Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, Yer HaNidachas, the city that serves Avodah Zarah. We talk about the Kishuf and Molech, and the requirement to destroy all the Avodah Zarah, the prohibitions against making a Matzeva, all these related to Avodah Zarah are repeated here, or initially taught here, because when the Jews entered Eretz Israel, they would come face to face with the idol worshippers of Eretz Canaan, and they would have to deal with this encounter, and they'd have to be ready and prepared to respond accordingly and to act accordingly and not to be swayed by the natives' practices. We also find large groups of mitzvahs pertaining to a justice system. This mitzvah to make a to appoint a Sanhedrin, to appoint a king, to appoint other smaller courts. The mitzvahs regarding witnesses and the mitzvahs regarding administering malchus. These mitzvahs are related to a judicial system, which is of course only appointed once the Jewish people have their own land. And this is important now because they are about to enter Eretz Israel. We find many many halachos, mitzvos regarding warfare, about the Shesifas Toar, and the pronouncements before going to war, and who is exempt from army service, and the requirements to sue for peace before a battle. All these mitzvos, again, apply to the Jewish people once they enter Eretz Israel and begin their conquest of the land. Other mitzvos were relevant particularly when they entered the land, such as Har Gerizim and Har Eval, and the mitzvah to write the entire Sefer Torah down on stones when they crossed the Yarden. Also, another aspect of that changed when they entered Eretz Israel is that they were permitted to eat meat after shechting it without bringing it as a karban. In the Midbar, according to the Gemara, in the Midbar, and as we, the Gemara learns from Sukkim, that they were only able to bring karbanos. If you wanted to eat meat in the Midbar, you had to bring a karban shlamim. You could not just shecht an animal on your own and eat it. Once they entered Eretz Yisrael, so now the Mizbeach was located in the central place. They were more spread out. They weren't all camped right around the base, right around the Mishkan with easy access to bring a karban. So when they entered Eretz Yisrael, it became permitted to shecht one's own meat, to eat it as chulin and not bring it as a karban. And as a result, Sefer Devarim is where we read about shechita, and the Torah repeats the mitzvahs of the isurim of dam and chelev, and repeats the list of animals that are forbidden to eat, and so on. We also find a list of mitzvahs of Sefer Devarim that govern a farmer and his produce, masros, bikurim, and other such mitzvos. Another important group of mitzvos we find in Sefer Devarim is a group of mitzvos pertaining to social interactions, such as tzedakah, maaser ani, the laws of hiring workers and how one is supposed to treat his workers, peah shikha, the requirements of how to treat a poor person when taking collateral from him. And these mitzvos are important for Eretz Israel because now, when they enter, when they were in the Midbar, there were no such thing as poor people. There were no such thing as workers because everybody got the mun from the heaven, and that's what they subsisted on. Their clothing grew with them in the Midbar. They had shelter provided by the Anane HaKavod or the Sukkos or whatever in the Midbar. And these mitzvot were not relevant. Now that they were about to enter Eretz Yisrael, this protection would be removed, and they would have to support themselves and become an agricultural society. There would be rich, there would be poor, and so now it would be important. Now the mitzvot tzedakah would become relevant. The mitzvot on how to treat your workers and pay them on time, and allow them to eat from the field while they're working, become relevant. The mitzvah of Maaser Ani becomes relevant. It was not relevant in the Midbar at all. In fact, Rav Hirsch says also this is why we some mitzvahs regarding marriage are repeated as well, but not all the mitzvahs about marriages are repeated. For example, the arayos are not repeated in Devarim, but what is repeated are the mitzvahs of kiddushin and divorce, and whom certain nationalities that may not be marrying to the Jewish people, mamzerim may not marry into Jewish people. We have the mitzvah of yibum. We have the laws of inheritance, which belong to marriage and family. These are repeated because these are That's what Reverse calls more the socioeconomic aspects of marriage. So the contractual and legal obligations of the marriage are mentioned in Sefer Devarim where they become relevant. Whereas the other aspects, which are not necessarily, don't necessarily change from the Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, are not repeated in Sefer Devarim. So, having gone through almost all the mitzvot, Rav Hirsch then says, this seems pretty clear. And even though he has not gone through every single mitzvah that's mentioned in Sefer Devarim, however, he's fairly confident that since we've accounted for the overwhelming majority of the mitzvot in Sefer Devarim, it would be safe to assume that the rest of the mitzvot would follow along the same lines of thought, the same argument that those that are repeated or taught fresh here are done so because they are relevant to the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael in a completely new way, or their meaning has changed slightly from life in the Midbar to life in Eretz Yisrael. And the laws that are not repeated are mitzvos that are equally applicable both in Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael. However, Rav Hirsch does say that we read that Hoel Moshe Beiris HaTorah Azos, that Moshe explained this entire Torah. It is called Mishnah Torah, repetition of the Torah, and he says that's because Moshe Rabbeinu did indeed review all the mitzvos, all 613 mitzvos. He had taught them earlier, even the ones that are mentioned Sefer Devarim, and now he was reviewing everything. However, in the written record of his speech, the Sefer Devarim is not a complete record verbatim of the speech that Moshe Rabbeinu gave in the Midbar. Rather, it is a selected excerpts of his speech, and the excerpts are those mitzvos which were again relevant now in a new way when they would enter Eretz Yisrael for the first time. And so this is the Mishnah Torah is an excerpt of the speech, with certain parts being repeated if they're relevant for Eretz Yisrael in the written record, and certain parts were held off from what they're earlier being taught, from when they were taught earlier, and were only written for the first time in Sefer Devarim because they are particularly relevant now and not earlier. Rav Hirsch notes that however, that's the second half of the Sefer, beginning with the 12th chapter, which we begin in Parshas Re'eh. The first 11 chapters, comprising the entirety of Parshios Devarim, Bo'es Chanan, Ekev, and the very beginning of Re'eh, are an introduction to the mitzvos that Moshe Rabbeinu reviewed. And this introduction, Rav Hirsch says, is recorded verbatim, word for word, in its entirety. And this is an introduction which we read this week and the following 2 weeks, Parshios, is meant to convey the attitudes that Klal Yisrael is supposed to have, and the attitudes will help them fulfill their mission as they enter Eretz Yisrael. So it begins in Sefer Devarim it begins in this week's parsha with a review of their history in the Midbar, and it continues next week with a review of the Averos they did, a review of the wars they fought, a review of the miracles Hashem did for them. Next week's parsha reviews the Aseret HaDibros and Matan Torah. And then beyond that, Moshe Rabbeinu then goes on to inspire them to build on what happened in the Midbar to serve Hashem and to adopt attitudes of Yiras Hashem and Avas Hashem and Dveikus BaHashem, based on their awareness of Hashem's presence through their stay in the Midbar. And so contained in this section are some mitzvos as well, which are, again, particularly relevant now that they are leaving the Midbar and leaving that closeness to Hashem, such as the mitzvos of Limud HaTorah, which now the Torah is being closed as a book, and now they have the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah devolves upon them to continue to develop in Torah and to review and remember the laws and that which is expected of them. And together with that goes the mitzvah of Vishinantam Livanecha and the mitzvah of Baal Tosif and Baal Tigra, to not add on to the mitzvahs, not detract from them, but to do the mitzvahs as commanded by Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu and given to us. The mitzvahs of Kriya Shema and the tefillin and mezuzah, birchas hamazon, zechiras yitzias mitzrayim, mitzvahs of tzitzis and shatnez, these are other mitzvahs in Sefer Dvarim, most of which are recorded in the introduction to the Sefer, this introductory section. And again, these are mitzvahs that are meant to remind us that Hashem is with us wherever we are. And so even though the closeness of the close relationship that was manifest in the Midbar was now coming to an end, but the people were still used to utilize these mitzvahs of Kriya Shema, Tefillin, Mezuzah, Birchas HaMazon, and so on, and Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, to remember that Hashem would always be with them, even in the new life that they would now have to adapt to. And so this is Rav Hirsch's overview of Sefer Devarim in its entirety, and its purpose as Mishnah Torah, its particular relevance to the Jewish people in their circumstance about to enter Eretz Yisrael, why certain mitzvot are repeated and others are not, and what this introduction that we will read in these first three parashios are meant to convey to us as well, and where they fit into this larger picture. And then Rav Hirsch concludes by introducing this parasha, Parashas Devarim, the first three chapters of the Sefer, in which we read primarily about the history in the Midbar. We read about Moshe Rabbeinu establishing judges, Moshe Rabbeinu sending out the spies and the fallout of that event. We read about, then we fast forward to the 40th year in the Midbar, and we read about things that we just read recently, their encounters with Edom and Moab and Ammon and Sichon and Og, and the outcome of those encounters. And the lesson of the beginning of this introduction, the lesson of the three chapters that form this week's parasha, Rav Hirsch says, now I will quote to you what he writes. He says, "The basic purpose of this first section of these introductory orations is to instill in the people the belief, based on its historical experiences, that what Israel requires in order to subdue the nations and conquer their land is not the skills and instruments of warfare, but devotion to God in the fulfillment of His will, and that such obedience to God, which is our sole task in times of peace, is sufficient also in times of war to overcome all the powers that oppose us. With obedience to God, we can accomplish everything. Without it, nothing. Israel is to enter upon its path in the history of nations not as a powerful nation skilled in the arts of warfare, but as the people of God's moral law. Israel's triumphs and defeats throughout its history attest to this point, in which the development of Israel differs from that of all other nations." And so that's why Moshe Rabbeinu begins his speech with the story of the Meraglim, and shows that the people were all concerned that they were not powerful enough, strong enough to enter the land. So Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, that's not important. You will not conquer the land with your strength, but by the grace of God, and by your connection to Hashem, and your serving Him, and your commitment to Him, then Hashem will take care of you, with or without the physical strength of your army. And that's why he talks about their encounters with Edom, Ammon, and Moab, whom they were not allowed to invade, because again, it was not about their capability to overpower those nations, but it was about Hashem that told them that it was not their right to enter that land. And Sichon and Og were powerful kings, and yet the Jewish people were able to overcome them, and that was despite their hesitation and Moshe Rabbeinu's fear of fighting against Og. Nevertheless, Hashem told them, do not fear, I am with you, and I have given him over into your hands. And so the message takeaway from this particular parasha and these first three chapters is that our success depends on our commitment to Hashem and our obedience to Him, and that's true in times of peace, and that's true in times of war too. In times of war also, our physical prowess and strength is unimportant and is not the determining factor in our success. And this is a particularly important message to the Jewish people as they're about to enter Eretz Israel and begin to fight and conquer the land. And it's important for them to remember throughout the conquest not to make the mistake of thinking that their physical strength is what is guiding their conquest, but it is their connection to Hashem. And should they fail to maintain that connection, they will be unsuccessful in their conquest. And this is an important overview to bear in mind as we go through the entire Sefer, and as we go through, and as we read this week's Parsha, we can now understand the perspective that Moshe Rabbeinu has, and the approach that we are supposed to take away from reading Sefer Devarim.